And welcome back to Nightside here on WGN 720 WGN. I am Eric Rung, and with me is Paul Lisnick, and in studio now is Filet of Solo, which is quite a show. And we're going to get a little bit of it here.
This is really cool, Eric, because Filet of Solo, this is its, I think, 22nd year, guys, right? Been going on a long time. It celebrates the breadth of Chicago's storytelling, live, through scenes, through music, in so many other ways. But let's let them tell you about it rather than me telling you about it. Dorothy Milne is the artistic director of the Lifeline Theater and the co-curator of Filet of Solo. Dorothy, hi, and give us some history.
Alrighty, The festival started at Live Bait Theater close to Wrigley Field when they were active. And when they closed their doors in 2009, Lifeline Theater started co-producing with them and taking over where the location where we produce it. And this is an exciting year because we are also, besides producing it at Lifeline, we're producing it at Heartland Cafe in their event space, the former Red Line Tap, which will be the last thing that happens in that space. It's closing at the end of this year, and so Heartland Cafe is staying open, just that section, for us to do the festival there for the month of January.
And Dorothy, tell us a little bit about the show itself.
Yes, it is storytelling. It's first-person narrative, telling a true story that happened to me. There are people doing their first-time ever efforts at this in some of the group shows, and then, like, the guests we have tonight are our long-term proficient people in the form that are doing one-person shows for the whole hour rather than a shared evening.
And basically, somebody gets on stage and they just tell a story. Once upon a time.
Well, it's nonfiction. Yes, it's once upon a time, but this happened to me.
Right.
So, and by the way, this plays from January 18th to February 2nd. And by the way, we want a night of inexpensive theater, if I can say that, because it's only like $10.
$10.
And $50, and you can see the whole festival, right?
Yes, which is like 40 shows, so you can,
it's amazing.
You can see everything.
Let's have some performance. Let's see what you guys do. Now,
I don't know if I have my story ready yet.
Oh, well, you write it.
why don't we let them do it, and then I'll see.
Actually, if Eric does a story, maybe it could be buy one, get one free, and then they pop over and...
There you go.
Oh, I'm just kidding. He'd be fabulous. So, early on, McLaurin, you go by Earl.
Yes, I do.
Right? So, your story is called The Malt Liquor Diaries. So many choices, so many beers, right?
Yes.
Tell us what led to this story, and then if you would, share a little of it with us.
I am also a collective member of Second Story, which is a storytelling collective here in Chicago. And about, it'll be 10 years in January, I submitted a story to them about my relationship with my dad. And at the time, I was just like working through it. And they ended up taking my submission, and eventually it got programmed, and I performed it, and it was great. Then I became a company member, and as I continued to write, another story popped out. And at that point, I was like, I feel like this is going to be a trilogy. And I feel like this is going to be a one-woman show. 10 years later, I'm finally putting it together. So I'm really happy to be able to be here and honor my dad and share my story with you guys.
And let's hear a little bit of it. Yeah. So this is going to be part of the performance we will see when we come see you. I know you're performing on January 19th and 26th.
Yes.
Right? So give us a little bit of the Malt Liquor Diaries.
All righty. When I was 4, my parents got divorced, and I was raised by my mother. Now, my mom has never tried to keep me or my sister, Therese, who's 8 years older, from my dad. But because I was only 4 when he left, I've really never known him as anything other than the persona of Early B. McLaurin. Early B, the B doesn't stand for anything, by the way. McLaurin stands around 6'2", has never weighed more than 160 pounds in his life, and can always be seen with a beer in one hand, a cigarette in the other, and a light slur with a straw hat precariously balanced on what I call the wild man. The wild man being his 1970s afro, which, unlike the nicely shaped afros you see on movies, features my dad's baby soft gray hair standing on end all over his head, a la Albert Einstein. So to me, he's always been this funky character, but never a real person. Alcohol probably had a great deal to do with that, but it's also made our relationship kind of simple. When we visit, my sister Therese does all the talking, and I nod where appropriate. I'm Early B. McLaurin. Just look at all this pretty. He'd always say, flashing a toothy grin. Now, as a child, I knew this wasn't normal, but I never questioned him, or Trees, or did anything, because I didn't have to. My sister's relationship with our dad, coupled with her big sister status and my young age, created a natural buffer that I've always leaned on to deflect the large purple elephant in the room, which, for all intents and purposes, is that my dad and I are kind of strangers to each other. Crazy, I know, but because he's always been under the influence, it never even occurred to me that our relationship would ever change. And then he fell.
Wow.
Wow.
Applause. Hit the applause button. So I've got
Ben, we got the applause button.
He's looking for the applause button. So Earl, I have to ask you, as I listen to that, and I know this continues on. That's just a small piece of it. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be tough parts, sad parts, funny parts. I'm just curious. This is your life. I mean, as Dorothy was saying, this, you're not making this story up. This is your life. How tough is it to put your life out on display for the public to see? The public you don't even know, because if somebody's going to buy a ticket, come see you.
You know what? Honestly, I would say it's easier to tell, for me to tell a story in front of strangers, because I have an acting background, so being vulnerable in front of people who you'll never see again, real easy. But once I submitted to Philly of Solo and all the marketing stuff started happening, an email went around my full-time job. It's on Facebook. It's people from my hometown. I'm like, right now, I'm just trying to stay focused on the work, making sure that the stories are good and that I am doing all the people who have helped me put these stories together proud. And I'll worry about the nerves later. But that's one of the brave things about telling stories.
Are there folks in your story who are still around, still with you, who might come see this, and all of a sudden there they are and they're seeing themselves portrayed by you?
Luckily, my family is... they're used to it now, but my sister, when I went home for Christmas, she flat out asked me, am I in the story? I'm like, yep. I told her...
Merry Christmas!
I said... don't worry, I'm still perfecting your voice. I got to treat it like it's any other piece just right now so I can just get through it.
Dorothy, when people decide to do this, I mean, again, you created this so many years ago. What is it about the ability or the desire to share a part of one's life in this storytelling way that brings to the forefront for people? I would think it's difficult to do.
It does require courage. It requires more courage than playing a character. It's you're doing yourself. You are the writer and the performer, and it's you're exposing yourself. There's something so powerful about the form where you see somebody who doesn't look like you. They're a different gender, a different culture, and then they tell a story that's personal, and it's very resonant and connecting of us, I think, and I think experiencing the form as an audience member makes you an addict, and I think it also has an addictive thing as a teller as well.
You know, one question that I want to ask you, actually ask all of you guys when we come back for break, is what you guys think makes a good story. So we'll ask you guys that on the other side of the break. Welcome back on 720 WGN Radio. My name is Eric Rung. I am with Paul Lisnick.
It's our last segment, Eric.
It is our last segment, and it's a good one.
Absolutely.
We've got some storytellers here from Filet of Solo. My question before we went to break was, in your eyes, what makes a good story? Dorothy, let's start with you.
I like a story where the teller learns something in front of us. I'm not interested in a story where they're telling me how somebody was a jerk to them. I'm interested in the story where the teller is the jerk who learns something. That's what I try to do for my
story. Does it need to be funny?
No, it does not.
Does it need to be tugging at your heart?
You know, a great story, but does both things.
And Earl, you just told a wonderful story.
Thank you.
That tugged at my heart.
I think what makes a good story for me is that it gives something to the audience member. Even though it's the story, you know, it's first person, it's about my life, I never want to have therapy in front of the mic or on stage. So if I'm not doing it for a purpose outside of myself, then that's not a story that needs to be told.
Now, our next guest, we could ask to answer that question, but I'm not going to make it that easy for America. We're going to make him perform.
Oh, my.
Oh, yes. Hi, Archie.
Hello.
It's Archie Jamjohn, and you've written a show called, or a piece called, A Boy and a Diva, and you brought a diva with you.
I never leave home without a diva.
That's a compliment. That's a compliment. Shannon Wright is here. So, Archie, tell us, kind of set this up, and we're going to get a little music from Shannon on this one.
Yeah, so this is one of the stories in my show, and during my show, Shannon kind of comes in and out, because in my show, I kind of rely on divas to get me through life.
We all do.
Divas are my inspiration, of course, so.
That's why I got Paul here.
Yeah, what do you think? Yeah. It's my job.
So yeah, so this is one of the scenes where Shannon comes in and, like, you know, helps the story move along.
All right,
yeah, let's go.
All right. 2 months into dating, it was my birthday. Psych and I headed to Hopleaf, and while we drank our matching Belgian ales, he asked me to be his boyfriend. Archie, you're so hot. Our Nookie is amazing, and I love your creative side. Wouldn't it be cool if we had kids one day? Gabies? Did that man just mention Gabies? I could suddenly picture myself with curly-haired Eurasian Gabies. He was sending my ladyboy ovaries into a frenzy. I was even contemplating how to ask my sister for her eggs. I turned to look at the clock. 10:26 p.m., the moment my life had changed. I turned back to look at Psych. He had fallen asleep at the bar. The next morning, I went home, started the dishes, and put on my Whitney Houston playlist. I belted out,
"You give good love."
I gave an amazing rendition of,
"All the men that I need."
I skipped over,
"Where do broken hearts go? Can they find their way home?"
And I scared my cat dancing to,
"I'm your baby tonight."
As I was scrubbing a frying pan, I thought to myself, this is going to be my life. A gay, artsy housewife. Yes! If Psych and I lasted, I would never have to worry about bills again, because that's how life works, duh. Psych was my chance, and we were actually in love. He wrote my name in pancake batter one night after drinking. I found a self-help book in his bedroom drawer about how to be a better boyfriend. He always held my hand in public, no matter what the neighborhood.
All right.
All right.
Very
nice. Hit the applause
cue.
I love that. I actually started, I got, "Our Nookie is amazing." I caught that line, and it kind of went on from there as well.
There was a lot of lines in there. That's great.
Yeah, great job, Archie.
That was excellent, and excellent singing as well.
Thank you, Shannon. Give us the impetus to this story, because these are truthful stories, right? So,
oh, right. So this
Wait,
is.
Do you have babies or what?
I maybe babies. Maybe soon, but not. My husband can't afford them quite yet. But this is a story based on this guy I dated for a long time, and we met on Adam for Adam, and we went out on our first date, and he kind of he passed out. He told me he had narcolepsy, and this story is really about, like,
Whoa.
When you date someone, it's kind of like about the fronts that you put on when you're dating people, and how when they're slowly stripped away, you find out who those people really are, and sometimes you find out who you are yourself, you know, too. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what that story
is. Yeah, passing out on a date, that's pretty good.
Wow. And, you know, and I
that's
kept
really
on with it. That's
too.
Not enough to turn me away.
So talk about the diva piece. Well, first of all, Shannon, so you played, it's obviously this support role to his story. Will she do various divas throughout the course of the piece?
Yeah, I mean, my main diva is Whitney Houston. So Whitney Houston appears a few times, but Madonna's in there, Lauryn Hill's in there. We have a little Paula Abdul as well, so...
No Cher?
Yeah, no Cher. Maybe in the next version of this.
Okay.
But no, the first story is the best, when she comes in as Whitney Houston and she saves me during a talent show. So
I just want to hear the Whitney Houston.
Why don't you sing the last part of Greatest Love of All?
Yes, go for it, Shannon.
And if by chance that special place that you've been dreaming of leads you to a lonely place, find your strength in love.
All right.
Get that along with the story. You get that incredible music.
Yes.
That
and by the way,
incredible.
You're performing that on January 18th at 8:30 at Lifeline, and January 25th
yes.
at 8:30
at Lifeline. Two Friday nights, yes.
Wow. You know, if you can't make it, I could do some of those voices.
How come you always do it when the mic is off, Paul? I don't do it when the mic is off.
Well, I don't know. If Sammy Davis Jr. is your diva, I might be able to do that one and Anthony Newley. I can pull both those off. I don't
know. I know Paul's trying to let you off the hook, but I'm not going to let you. Archie, tell me what you think makes a good story.
I mean, lots of things make a good story. What I always aim for when I'm writing a story is I want to make you laugh, and then I want to make you cry, and then I want to make you laugh, and then I want to make you cry. You are my victim a little bit.
You want to take me on an emotional roller coaster.
I'm into putting people on the roller coaster. Yeah. Whew.
So
yeah.
when you write these stories, are you writing for the audience, or are you writing for yourself, knowing that the audience is going to come along for the ride?
I think a lot of the times I start writing for myself, but by the time I get to a version of the story that's for the stage, of course I'm going to acknowledge the audience, and I want to entertain them, and I want them to feel something and learn something.
Earl, so. Same with you?
I was thinking that there's a point in the editing process where there are certain things that have to just be said to the audience outside of... I'm one of those performers, I do a lot of asides to the audience, mm-hmm. because honestly...
I love that.
I can't figure out a way to make it into the story, so I just stop and I say, hey, by the way, this is the thing that I want to tell you. Okay, now back to the rest of the story.
Oh, that's awesome.
What is there when you guys are writing these stories, are you writing them as a performance piece, or are you writing them that possibly could get published in some sort of magazine, some online, wherever?
I have versions of my story that I do on the stage, and then there are versions of my stories that have been published on The Rumpus and different online magazines. So, yeah.
Obviously, it's a little different style of writing, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you're doing a story on stage, I'm very aware of how much an audience member can take in at a time, how much they can process. And when somebody's reading something, you have a lot more space.
Yeah, you can go back and read it.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly.
And Dorothy, are some of these, as this festival goes on for the several weeks, are some stories more family-friendly than others? Is there a warning out there for anybody, or is it pretty much anybody can, it's an adult-only thing? What do you think?
Well, here's the thing. A lot of the groups are collectives. Like, for instance, Earl and Archie are both doing one-person shows, but they're both attached to different collectives. Earl with Second Story and Archie with Outspoken and other groups. And we have 40-some shows, but we have 120 performers, so we can't guarantee that any show is family-friendly. Some of them are, but I don't really know, because I will be intimate with some of the one-person shows and stuff, but the different collectives sometimes have 7 different people every time they perform. So it's a huge range of but we don't say it's family friendly.
So does that ever, I just have to ask, so a follow up, does that ever affect you? I mean, I'm thinking sometimes for my work on television or Eric's work, sometimes I think about, somebody could be seeing that, and I want to think about how that message comes across. Do you ever look out at an audience and go, well, there's a 4-year-old, that's interesting, or young people, and is it a matter of, here we go, come along for the ride, or would you ever go, oh, I don't know?
I'm like, well, you brought your child, and now you have a teaching moment after this story, because I don't.
Stay after
adjust.
For the after program discussion we'll be having.
I've actually had to edit stories for different events that, like, our stories may start out in a bar, but it may be reprogrammed somewhere where I can't swear. Which is really difficult.
Like here.
Yeah. Well, you did a heck of a job not swearing.
Yes.
I mean, swearing it's really... the rest of it.
Eric's finger was right near that dump button. You were ready for it.
No. Sometimes I've written stories where if it's a cuss word, it's there for a reason. And I'm not going to edit myself.
Well, words matter. I mean, especially whether you're writing for the ear or you're writing, you know, for somebody to read. I mean, every single word matters.
It's precious, precious space. Don't any curator, any editor will tell you, don't write anything you don't plan on using, because you don't want to lose the audience in anything extra.
Dorothy, you've been a part of this for a while, so I mean, what excites you about this?
It is one of my favorite art forms. Every time I go and see a show, I am thrilled and moved and laugh and cry, and I just never get tired of this strong bond I feel with the person telling the story, because no matter how different their experience is from mine, the core human emotions we experience are all the same, and it is a very powerful and affirming shared humanity experience.
Just very quickly, you guys are storytellers, but you're also performers. Do you identify? Could I do your story, Archie, or Earl? Could I do your story? Or would you say, no, it's my story. I need to perform it.
No. Sorry for that face. That face was, no.
That's okay. It's radio. They didn't see it, but okay, it was good. A big smile.
The material is so personal. My cousin was actually in the Filet of Solo last year, and I directed her. And even looking through her material, there's no way I could even begin to do her story justice because she lived.
All right, finally, you can get tickets at lifelinetheater.com. Lifelinetheater.com, theater spelled T-R-E, the proper way.
Yeah, and I was going to say, just real quick, Dorothy, tell us where people can find you.
LifelineTheater.com, and it's at Glenwood Avenue in Morris.
It's the same place.
The North Side neighborhood of Rogers Park. We're at two locations, Lifeline Theater and the Heartland Cafe event space.
Don't miss it. Great show.